Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is December 4th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. The holiday season is upon us. For those of you in America, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the holiday season coming up. Lots of Christmas things going on at the Solari Report. First of all, give the gift of the Solari Report. Each Christmas, we invite all of our subscribers to give someone a free two-month gift subscription. That means it includes the January wrap-up, which is one of the favorite pieces we do every year. It reviews all the stories of 2014, both general stories and financial stories. A lot of other things going on. We're going to do a big comic book. And we talk about the major trends that are going to affect our lives and finances in the coming year. And it comes again with a big web presentation. We call it a comic book and a transcript. So this is a Solari Report favorite. So the person of your choice is going to have access from December 22nd to February 22nd. To give this gift, please send the first and last name of the recipient as well as his or her email address and phone number to customerservice@solari.com. We need it by December 19th. All of this information is up on the Give the Gift section of the blog, so just check into the blog if you didn't write that down. Again, customerservice@solari.com. And we came up with this because somebody who was gifted in marketing kept trying to talk us into giving people a free trial, and I said, why should we give things to strangers? Why don't we give them to the subscribers? So we came up with Give the Gift. So we hope you enjoy that. We got a lot of great people last year who really took advantage of that, and I think really enjoyed giving it to their friends and family. The second thing is that we finished the 2014 Christmas card. It's up on the blog. We sent it out in the update. I hope you check it. It's really wonderful. And we announced our contributions. What I said in the card was, let me read it to you. Who can we help to make sure no one is hungry, cold, or feels left behind during these long winter months? There are so many fine people around you who are doing wonderful things in your local area. I hope you find them, support them, and draw inspiration from their efforts. If you're looking for great ideas, we highly recommend our choices for Christmas 2014. Our donations this year are going to The Contributor, which is the highest circulating street newspaper of its kind. It's based in Nashville. It circulates more than 60,000 papers each month. It's distributed by homeless and formerly homeless newspaper vendors. It provides a source of their income while ensuring coverage of issues surrounding homelessness and poverty. The Contributor is proud, they say, to announce that 50% of their vendors are no longer homeless, due in part to the income generated through the paper sales. So the first is The Contributor. The second is Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee. If you can, you can scroll back on our Christmas card page and look at some of our last donations, and you'll see we're very big on food banks. I used to be on the board of the New York City food banks, and food banks do tremendous things throughout the country. So your local food bank always qualifies as a place to help out with money. If you don't have money, help them out with volunteer work. There's always, always plenty to do at the local food banks. We continue to work on plans for 2015. We're thinking of extending the lunches into days, like the day we did in California in November. First one up we're working on is April in New York, so stay tuned. We'll have those announcements in early 2015. Our theme tonight is the oil price drop rockets around the planet. Well, you heard it here first. 2 weeks ago with Jim Norman, we discussed the oil card, and Jim brought up the possibility of $40 per barrel oil. A week later, everyone from the Wall Street Journal to Market Watch to Bloomberg is contemplating $40 oil. But you did hear it on the Solari Report first, but it was the talk of the town over the last week. Part of this, of course, is the East-West squabble going on with Putin sort of in the middle. Putin has just signed a Russian budget assuming $100 per barrel of oil. They're very, very dependent on oil and gas revenues. So the Russians are really heading into being squeezed hard. This is good for a lot of people and companies who are getting squeezed by the prices in the global slowdown. And so lower energy prices is going to help a lot of people. Of course, it's going to hit the oil and gas sector hard. Lots of good stories about that up on the blog. One of the commentaries I did this week was called the Echo Oil Card, because in addition In addition to the oil cards or to the national security state driving down the price, all sorts of excuses were given for the problems in the price. But the newest one was very much related to the idea that it's going to be good for the environment if we get off oil and gas. And I put up some of the links. One of it was the German energy industry success at switching to renewables. Of course, the lower oil prices are going to be very tough on renewables. And I put up a chart of the solar ETF and oil. And as you can see, the solar ETF is coming down with oil. Very interesting to always watch those charts in comparison. Money and markets. Clearly, the global economy is in a slowdown. We're seeing signs of deflation pop out everywhere. The squeeze on households throughout the globe is significant, including in the U.S. That's no surprise. We've been talking about this for years here at the Solari Report, and surely you can feel the slow burn in your own lives. A big story in the Wall Street Journal this week about health care, food, and basic necessities squeezing the middle class. One of the most interesting items, though, in that was significant increases in the cost of cell and home internet for Americans. The ugliness is serious. If you look at what the taxpayer is paid for these two services, frankly, I believe they should be free, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be in a healthy economy. Or nearly free. The Wall Street Journal reports home internet is up 87% since 2007. Imagine that. You're seeing just serious blowback as a result of numerous sort of top-down control policies and the global slowdown that's creating what I call blowback congestion throughout governments. We're seeing the Swedish government failed in its reconfiguring, ditto the Israeli government. If you had the same process of sort of calling for a reorganization as you do in Sweden and Israel, that would have happened in the U.S. with Chuck Hagel stepping down. It reminds me of the president of Luxembourg's great quote that we often use: "We know what to do, we just don't know how to get elected after we do it." And so many of the politicians in these positions are caught between all sorts of double binds. Both the Mr. Global on one side and the people on the other, but also trying to bring balance to the global economy because the Western consumer has had quite a ride, and trying to bring them down to something that's balanced globally is a very painful process. If you listen to Sir James Goldsmith, he told you why starting that process was madness. But now that the process has begun and is underway, the politics of it are very painful. It appears the president is going to replace Hagel with Ashton Carter, which is a very interesting choice. If you look at Carter, he reminds you a little bit of Merkel in the sense that he's a physicist, brilliant sort of intellectual academic career, and he's essentially what I would call a high-tech Mandarin. He's somebody who's come up the nuts and bolts of the national security state, lots of experience, both at the Department of Defense, with the think tanks, with the contractors. And this is a guy who is clearly very intelligent and has the scientific and engineering background to deal with enormous complexity professionally. So he can deal with the nuts and bolts of the defense establishment in a way that someone like Hagel wouldn't have the background to do. But I think people like Carter and Merkel, you're going to see a lot more where you're calling for people with very extraordinary intellectual capability and scientific and engineering background who can handle the complexity of what they're dealing with and will build these careers that really turn them into what I call high-tech Mandarins. Well, there's a huge push on for online sales. Every turn, you see more and more effort to get people not into the stores, but to do their shopping online. And so the push over the Black Friday weekend and what's called Cyber Monday was very strong. Sales, online sales up, but not as much as they were last year, but still respectable given what's going on in the economy. But you take a look at it and you think, what in the world is going on? Because remember, this is going to be very bad for small business. And it's also going to be tough for labor because you're talking about instead squeezing or lowering the cost of delivering goods and services to consumers in a way that squeezed labors enormously. If you listen to the interview we did with Steve Roche on the rebalancing of the relationship between China and Asia and the United States, you know the squeeze has a very long way to go. It's something we'll talk about more in the wrap-up. One of the stories I posted this week is Amazon announced it's bought another 15,000 robots for its warehouses, and it's going to hire 80,000 temp workers at Christmas. What that means is the robots get the full-time job and the 80,000 humans. The humans get the part-time jobs, and so robots don't need health care. And so Obamacare, thank you very much for that. Some of this, again, has helped the consumer with lower gas prices, so the drop in oil. But announcements this week and last week about easing of mortgage lendings. I think if you look at the number of people who are underwater on the mortgage, they're dropping. They're down from 25% to, I think, about under 10% now. So things are improving that way. There is reports from all over the country on shortage of skilled laborers, but there is an excess of unskilled labor. So as we see the changes in the economy, we really do have a shortage of skilled workers in many areas. But we have an extraordinary number of people who don't have the skills for those jobs. So there's a real mismatch in the labor force. And you wonder how it could have happened. And certainly we're spending a fortune on education. There was no reason for it to happen. The shrieker meter is working overtime yet again. Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal, top of the paper all week long, has been riots and protests, whether in Ferguson or in New York. But the clear message is, don't worry about the Hispanics. Black people are much worse. I'm reminded of the deputy assistant secretary in the Clinton administration who said, oh, well, black people are hopeless. We're going to move them out and bring in Hispanics. But there's no doubt that, I believe the only people rioting pretty much are the people who are being paid to riot. I'm very suspicious of what's going on, particularly in the Ferguson situation. The New York situation is a little bit more complicated because the police were clearly over the line in that situation. And so, but I suspect that there's a lot of promotion of the protests. We also see Bill Cosby being absolutely raked over the coals in what's going to be one of the ugliest hits I've ever seen. I'm assuming that the allegations are either not true or if there is a little bit of truth, and they're being way cooked up. And this guy is really being taken to the cleaners. My guess is if you look at the networks going after them, they're probably pretty similar to the ones that went after Gary Webb. But I think you're looking at a story or a series of stories, sort of the black beatdown, that is about two things. One is a desire for greater federal control of police. So this is about the militarization of the local police and getting control of them, which is a very scary thing. That's the last thing you want, is the feds controlling your local police. The other thing is I think they're covering up the immigration story and trying to distract from it. We have 17 states, with Texas in the lead, suing the Obama administration on immigration. That's going to be a big one. We saw NASA this week delay their Orion mission. Maybe it'll take off tomorrow. We'll see. And that's a test flight for flights that hopefully, if they are successful, will take human crews to Mars. Bank deposit insurance. We have bank issues both in China and the U.S. China has just started to float their proposal on deposit insurance. Very interesting pros and cons. I'll have a story that'll be up tomorrow about it. China's offering 81,000, essentially U.S. equivalent, and that's going to put them ahead of both Hong Kong and Singapore in terms of what those areas offer. So it'll be good for the banks who use it. There's also a lot of rural cooperative banks and others who won't have the benefit of it. And the question is, what will it do to those? In the U.S., we had a highly muddled, irresponsible article by Ellen Brown, who sometimes can put out some good pieces, but on banking, I find we disagree pretty clearly. And it started off my week with about 5 subscribers or clients emailing, wanting to know if they should take all their money out of the bank. I said, absolutely not. Don't be ridiculous. But the issue, one of the issues was FDIC insurance trustworthy or not? The only reason that I think the U.S. Treasury and the Congress would let FDIC go down is if Mr. Global really wanted to take it down. I don't see any indication of that whatsoever. So if you're under the FDIC limit of $250,000 in a bank, as a practical matter, I wouldn't worry. And one of the advantages, if we lose reserve currency status, we have to worry. But as long as we have reserve currency status, remember, they can print as many dollars as they want. So we have to worry about debasement, but we really don't have to worry that they don't have the power to print dollars. The issue that Brown points out, which is a legitimate issue, is derivatives have now been given first priority over deposits. There's great complaint in the folks, who are very opposed to the bailout, saying, well, it's very wrong to take the money out of deposits. Well, if banks go down, that's what you're going to do. Uninsured deposits are absolutely going to go down. And yes, they are going to be treated as creditors. And that's the way the world worked. And it's the way the world worked for centuries before bailouts came along. So I kind of feel like saying, if you put your money in an institution that goes down, well, that's how it works. I personally don't bank in a bank that engages in derivatives. And I would do everything I could to avoid banking in a bank that engages in derivatives. I don't keep more than $250,000 in and rarely have, except, just when transitioning money from one place to another. I'm not worried about, again, the FDIC system. But I do want to be in a bank that I think could make it if the FDIC system went down. And I think my bank has a good chance of doing that. So I want some real fundamental soundness, and I want excellence in leadership. So it matters the quality of the fundamental economics at your bank and the quality of the leadership. Good God. that's the way it used to be before we thought the government would take care of everything. So the nanny state is not going to protect us. So we're going to have to go back to old-timey thinking. So the quality of the financial institutions you do business with matters tremendously, and you need to make sure you're doing business with people that you think have real fundamental economics and good sense behind them. There's a commentary up, I put an article by on the false East-West paradigm. Very good. He posits scenarios that has the dollar going to very little or nothing. And I just put up a note saying, look, you need to contemplate this kind of scenario with the dollar going very high. We're having a breakout of adult fairy tales. One positing dollars in values, U.S. dollar index at as high as 165, and others positing the U.S. dollar at zero. And as far as I'm concerned, they're all extreme. What we're watching is a pendulum that goes back and forth and back and forth and allows, it's all part of creating the rebalancing of the global economy, but it does it in a way that the leadership can most harvest everyone and sort of trade in and out, in and out, in and out. Watch out. The Wall Street Journal drumbeat on the editorial page on vaccines continues today with an absurd editorial saying parents who don't get their kids' vaccine are putting it all at risk. It's ridiculous, horrible, but, it is a red flag that says to me, watch out, watch out, watch out. Another commentary we had up is Team Awesome Solari Circle. That's the little Solari Circle we're doing with our own team right now. We're in the middle of simulating $1 million portfolio at Yahoo Finance. But as we're working through our little investment issues, we're sort of sharing our agenda and some links with everyone. We do it every 2 weeks, and so we keep posting that, and you can check that out on the blog. Couple of stories worth watching in the markets. Global bond yields continue to decline. It's like a limbo dance. How low can you go? More and more cash on the sidelines. The bond funds now, their allocations are moving up to 6%. It's very hard to match the index when you have that much money uninvested. And one of the reasons that index funds are reported to do well is they're fully invested, where a lot of the active managers, both equities and cash, see merit to having cash in this environment, and I truly understand. Interesting, Uber, in the process of reengineering the global taxi market, has now gotten financing, private sources. It's not a public deal. Their valuation, $41 billion. Amazing. Let's just quick look at the markets. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, now up 18%, S&P up 14%. Who would have thought that the 20-year Treasury would outperform the equity markets? Unbelievable. The corporate aggregate bond, AGG, the ETF, up 3% for the year. EEM, emerging markets and gold down 2% now for the year. Oil down 30%. That's quite a swan dive from where it was in the summer. So if you look at a chart of futures, it's amazing the spread. Coffee up 70%, crude oil down 30%. So the commodities are quite stretched out in either direction. One of the questions I got that I wanted to answer during Money and Markets was a good one. Let me read it to you. I would like to ask Catherine if she could recommend 3 or 4 websites for information concerning stocks. I've been mostly in cash for the last 2 years. In 2008, I took charge of my portfolio and found a newsletter recommending commodities. I did quite well. Now I have time and the market has changed. I need more information to make better choices. Okay, let me describe what I read now as an investment advisor. I'm probably going to spend more time than you. I think it's very, very important to understand primary trends. I spend a lot of time trying to do that, and that's why I've organized the Salieri Report both with the wrap-ups and the equity overviews to really help me distill down the noise and the news and look hard at the numbers and sort of define and see what the primary trends are. So you absolutely want to sort of stay tuned into the wrap-ups and watch them for ideas and opportunities in the equity overviews too. To help me with primary trends, I listen to Don Cox, who's been on the Salieri Report before. Wonderful, very experienced investment advisor and investor, and Kiplinger as well. One of the problems I have with a lot of financial commentary is most of them don't understand the black budget and haven't really gotten deeply into sort of the national security state and what it's all about and how it works. And because of that, they just have very false and very misleading frameworks. And they're unbelievably confident. You know, they stick with the official reality. They're unbelievably confident and very convincing, except they're dead wrong. And their map is so incomplete, it's frightening. So they're not a whole lot of people that really add. And a lot of the ones you hear on the Salieri Report. People like Jim Norman and Dr. Joseph Farrell have been very helpful to me. Individual stock ideas, believe it or not, my favorite source is Forbes. Forbes does a really good job of covering new and interesting young companies. A lot of interesting ideas from a global market at Seeking Alpha, which is a website that I will occasionally use. And again, Kiplinger will come up with some interesting ideas as well, although they're much more U.S.-centric. The thing that helps me the most is traveling. So I drive around a lot, and you have a much different sense of Starbucks as an investment if you've been in 100 Starbucks all around the world. And so I really make it my business wherever I go, whether it's driving around the United States or traveling around the world, to really try and understand how different operations work and what it says about the quality of the management and the leadership, which is something I pay a lot of attention to. For market data, I sort of live on Yahoo Finance as my base site, but I use stock charts for doing charts. I find it's important to do your own charts. Occasionally for a foreign stock, I'll have to go to Bloomberg. If I was willing to spend the money, which I'm not, I would probably have a Bloomberg terminal the way I did at Hamilton Securities. I watch the U.S. dollar index at MarketWatch. I also use business intelligence a lot for primary trends. I'll jump that back. And then I use silver and gold or money to watch gold and silver, and then Kitco for historical data. I hang out at FinViz. It's FinViz.com it's called Financial Visualization. And it's got great sort of ways of looking at financial data and tracking the markets. And because I'm an investment advisor and have to sort of dig into mutual funds, I subscribe to Morningstar. I just find their site interesting to look at. For technical analysis, I think you don't need to understand the black budget to do great technical analysis. You just have to do technical analysis. You can respond entirely to price. My favorite source for technical analysis is Rambus Chartology. Just great charts, great insight. You know, Rambus has an incredible gift, I think. So I'm a subscriber there. The challenge with technical analysis, I think the way to approach investment is with both technical analysis and sort of aligning with the primary trend. I think technical analysis can get you just chasing price, and you can make some bad mistakes. And so if you have a clear picture of the primary trend and you try and stay in alignment with it, but then use technical analysis for entry and exit. I think that's the way to go. It's important to understand that in the last depends on when you want to look at the statistics, but generally most active managers do not outperform index funds in a period like this. So you want to keep that in mind and sort of take a look at who's outperforming the index funds and why is always a good thing to do. So I hope that's helpful. Our hero this week is Congressman Marcy Kaptur, a favorite of mine, as you know, if you've been a subscriber at the Solari Report. She just won her 17th congressional term by a landslide. I hadn't looked at the numbers until this week, 68-32%. That's a real landslide. She is smart. She's honest. She's hardworking. She's well-educated. She cares tremendously about her constituents, does a great job for them. Her understanding of the economy, if you travel around her region with her and talk about the economy and the Great Lakes, the woman really knows her stuff. She's got an urban planning background, also an MIT graduate. And to me, there's nothing more important than excellence in leadership. And, you know, people always tell me that everybody in Congress is corrupt and terrible. And I say that's not true at all. And the fact that Kaptur is now in her 17th term is an example of that. Anyway, so she's the hero. And it's funny. I told the story in the blog post about a Republican, a devout Republican, who I persuaded to come listen to Kaptur with me. We were doing a fundraiser in Ohio with some friends, and he grumbled that she had socialist leanings, but he listened to her proposals on financial responsibility and was so impressed he wrote a generous check, which goes to show you that if you just run the money clean, a lot of the ideology and those debates go away. And I said in the blog post what I always tell my neighbors, and this is, remember, I live in a highly segregated county. If we could just collaborate about the government money, then we could hate each other rich instead of hating each other poor. So Marcy Kaptur is somebody who's done a lot to try and run the money clean. Many great questions in Ask Catherine, so let me tear through it. Hi, Catherine, loved it. We have listened to the podcast 3 times. We're talking about Jim Norman's oil card. I wrote to Jim and got a very nice reply from him. I asked him a question about the massive south of the border immigration. He gave me an interesting answer, one I sort of suspected. One of the things, it was a long and very detailed answer. It was very impressive, but one of the things Jim said is, you know, he thinks they're bringing in young, fresh talent to keep the game going, and I agree. I think that's part of the agenda. I love you and Jim because you're interested in the truth, no matter what your opinion may be. You want to know the facts. Not too many do. Thanks again for this great website and for having Mr. Norman on. Very good stuff. We had another wonderful subscriber ask very detailed questions about his price talk, and he posted a very, very detailed response, which I put up on the blog. It's either under subscriber input or under the Jim Norman oil card blog post, but it's quite detailed and long about the price and how the pricing works and where to get the data. And it was a extraordinary effort. Just goes to show you, he really is he's got that deep knowledge that many decades, you know, with boots on the ground and in the business can do. Hi, Catherine. I had the distinct pleasure of hearing about the Breakaway Society when you were on Whitley Strieber's show, Dreamland. What a great show, and thank you for your participation. I think you're one of the most intelligent human beings walking this planet at this time. I love your work and love that you have a good heart. Moving on, I don't know if you've read Benjamin Fulford's writings each Monday, but he's saying some pretty interesting things that I wanted to run by you. I'm fully aware that I may not receive a response from you, but at least I wanted to get this to you in case you had not seen it. You can read Benjamin's column here. And the fourth paragraph from the end of the column, some bank computers are now free-willed sentient beings operating independently of central bank computers. They think like the Mother Earth and are acting on behalf of the planetary consciousness and genetic entities. I find this interesting, positive, and encouraging for humanity. Maybe we will not make it, survive this mess after all, or is Benjamin rendering disinformation? Oh, maybe we will make it. Or is Benjamin rendering disinformation? I can't tell sometimes, but maybe you can. All the best. First of all, I think Fulford is completely without accuracy on many of the things he says. He's certainly entertaining, but I just, you know, I can't relate to pretty much anything he says. The idea that systems that were developed to serve humans have moved outside of human control or acting on their own free will, I think is not true, number one. But number two, if they are acting out of control of the humans that they who created them and for which they're supposed to do certain functions, it's because someone is hacked in and is controlling them, whether it's Promise software system or, you know, because there have been many decades. If you haven't read Michael Thomas's book, Black Money, and you want to understand how all these systems can be hacked into and manipulated, you know, it's all there. I will say that Elon Musk gave a warning in a speech in MIT. I'm going to talk more about it at the wrap-up. It was up on the blog. I think it's a very important speech, warning about artificial intelligence and the dangers of literally interdimensional forces or energies that don't act in our best interest having an influence on them, that is very dangerous. So I'm a Christian. I believe in angels and demons. And, you know, I've certainly done Coast to Coast for enough years to get exposed to a lot of the more responsible and irresponsible stuff about paranormal and other kind of energy things. And I think the idea of artificial intelligence and creating systems that can be hijacked by those energies is a real danger. And so, no, I'm not encouraged by this whatsoever. I think it's very, very dangerous. And not that I think what Fulford says is true, but I think Musk's warning is very well taken. I put up an article sometime in the last 2 weeks about scientists announcing that they had proved parallel universe and interdimensionality. And again, I just think there are forces of intelligence and power that operate, you know, outside the material dimension and influence ours. And so we need to be very careful about these things. It's one of the reasons I stay away from things like remote viewing or all sorts of paranormal stuff, because I don't think you begin to understand, you know, what you can invite in when you dabble with that stuff. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, how much of the evolution and degradation in the quality of television programming over the years has to do with the powers that be wanting to control what our minds are focused on? In one sense, 100%, because if we as a society had really wanted to use television in very positive and powerful ways, it would be quite extraordinary what we would be doing with it. At the same time, we also see new technology shifting flow out of the TV channel and into the internet, computer, smartphone, tablet, you know, the internet of all things channel. And part of what you're watching is a spiral down as everybody tries to turn up their shriek-o-meter and do more extreme and shocking and dramatic and entertaining things to try and attract as they're sort of losing their market share. So a lot of the shriek-o-meter we're seeing both on TV and in the print media and in a variety of different sort of forms is as everything sucks into that smartphone and the mobile system, you see more and more people traditionally having difficulty attracting the audience as everything sort of organizes and shrinks into that little phone. So another question, could you see any reason why the powers that be might want to crash the value of the U.S. dollar? No, I think they want to swing the pendulum back and forth and back and forth and back and forth as part of building out a global currency. And will the U.S. dollar evolve into the global currency or will something else come up and take it? You know, I think that's a ways down the road. They just need to keep swinging the pendulum back and forth and have lots of fairy tales and lots of competition to kind of make that system go and get built out with redundancy. Hi, Catherine. I met with you in Albuquerque and so enjoyed our time together. Thanks for doing this call today. I have the following question. I'm on the board of a not-for-profit that produces documentaries. The founder is planning to raise funds on Kickstarter for the nonprofit's current film. It's my understanding that the Kickstarter distributes funds raised to the creator of the project, in this case, the founder of the not-for-profit, the funds being donated to the not-for-profit. Can the funds being donated to the not-for-profit and avoid personal tax, or will the funds be taxed as ordinary income before a donation can be made? It is my understanding that Indiegogo does allow projects to be created by a nonprofit entity, thus avoiding all IRS problems, but they do not have the tracking software or visibility of Kickstarter. We discussed this on our interview with Patty, and I would encourage you to listen to it. It was very good. There's no clear direction. Something can only be deductible if it is given directly to the not-for-profit. So it sounds like if you want to preserve the tax, it's going to go through. It would have to go through Indiegogo. My take on these things, in many cases, is it's either a gift or it's partially a gift and partially a payment for a good or service. So that would be my sort of approach if I was doing this. But it's clearly the IRS has not made it clear. And so we could literally see things that we thought were gifting to an individual, you know, within the $14,000 annual gifting allowance, the IRS say, no, that's ordinary income. So this is a pretty fluid area, and there's a lot to be debated out. So it seems to me if you you might consider doing two campaigns, one on Kickstarter for the individual and one on Indiegogo that goes straight into the not-for-profit. Another question, I just got word from my sister that her six-year-old boy was suspended from school for drawing a gun and pretending to shoot it. I'm not sure all the details yet, but was wondering if they wanted to pursue the legality of this, where you might find a civil right lawyer that deals with these types of issues. I don't know. What I will say is if it was a real gun, as opposed to a toy gun, and a six-year-old pulled out the real gun and pretended to shoot it, then that six-year-old boy should definitely be suspended. So if anything, I'd like to help a lawyer to help the school. I can't imagine why you'd want to pursue the legality of this. It sounds to me like the school is well within its rights. There are many local currency and network currency and barter systems that could work and add tremendous value to the economy. Oh, sorry. The question is, wonderful subscriber posted lots of complimentary currency ideas from a wonderful woman in Marguerite Kennedy in New Zealand, and another series from someone I don't know. And I basically wrote back, and because I've looked at hundreds of these things, and here's what I said. There are many local currency and network currency and barter systems that could work and add tremendous value to the economy. The reason they don't work is because they're not allowed to work. So the question for all of us is, how are they going to win at economic warfare against the pro-centralization team, or at least exist side by side? Unless you address the enforcement question, none will work. So it takes us back to the control issue every time. What happens to most community currency systems or local currency or complementary currencies is they get sabotaged in a variety of ways. So if you're going to launch one of these things, it's going to be in a hostile environment. And that's one of the reasons I've always been such a supporter of gold and silver coins is you don't have to invent a currency system. You just need to do it. You just do it. You know, you've got the coins, you've got the currencies, you've got a way to trade them. That's one of the reasons Franklin and I created silverandgoldormoney.com. So anyway, all the currency questions comes down to enforcement. How are you going to protect yourself from the people who want to keep a monopoly? And it's very sad because there are millions of people sitting around doing nothing in the U.S. economy and millions of things that need to be done. And that's if we could have complementary and local currencies, that wouldn't be happening. That would be solved and would create enormous value within the economy. Could you please comment on Martin Armstrong's theories? And do you think that he is in any way considered what you call the breakaway economy, UFO economy? It's tough because I've occasionally read Martin Armstrong, and I have been to one of his conferences. He's got a black box model, and I can't tell you what's in the model. I've never seen him say or do anything that would tell me it was it was out of alignment with the kind of 2.0, 3.0 framework I have. I don't always disagree with his work. I don't always agree With his work, I often disagree, but I think he's interesting, and he clearly has his own, sort of his own approach. But again, it's a black box, and he really doesn't take you into the black box, so I can't say. Let's go to the movies. I suggested a very interesting comedy this week. It's a very light, unimportant, or sort of warm and friendly, modest film. It's called If I Were You, but it's a remarkable performance by Marcia Gay Harden, who's quite an accomplished actress. And if you're looking for something heartwarming and human, it's just a lovely, lovely movie about a wonderful woman who just takes the human approach, and she just marvelous acting jobs. One of the things that happens is she ends up playing King Lear in an amateur production, and it is the most interesting interpretation of Lear I've ever seen. It's kind of cute. Anyway, so if you want something warm and funny over the holiday season, very light, it's definitely a good one. Our interview this week was with Patty Kemmerer, who is a partner at Kemmerer Schooley Smith. Very good interview. We go through so many different issues, and I love doing this with Patty at the beginning of December, because it's very important before you get to the end of the year that you sit down and look through your accounts, your business, your personal investments, everything, and think about the tax implications both this year and next year, and take the time to make sure that you're on top of it and everything is organized and impeccable. It can save you a lot of time and money if you get it right. So Patty and I just went through all the nuts and bolts of some of the things you need to think about. One of the things I talked about was the importance of sales tax on online purchases and sales, which is becoming a much more important issue as more and more of that flow moves online. So definitely listen to it and take the time to make sure your financial house is in order before the end of the year. Coming up, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders next week. I'm looking forward to that. Certainly this year, but in the last 3 weeks, the precious metals market has been one of the most baffling and interesting markets globally. So I'm really looking forward to talking with Franklin. Then the following week, wonderful, wonderful Junius Ricardo Stanton joins me on the Solari Report for Unpacking Divide and Conquer. Junius is one of my favorite radio show hosts in the country and does most of his coverage on the African-American community, and he's someone I can have a real raw, uncut conversation with about what in the world the beatdown on the African American community is, what's going on, and how does that work, and what do we do about it? And then we are hoping to have the editor of The Contributor join us for a special for Christmas. And then don't forget January 8th, the wrap up, our annual wrap up. This is a big one. So this is when we sit back and we say, okay, what happened in 2014? What's important? What are the big trends for 2015? What's coming up? What do you need to think about? What does it mean to you? So if you have questions, comments, current concerns, if there's something you want to address, send it in now. We've started to work on it already. This is a big production. So please let us know if you have questions or anything you want us to address on that. So until next week, with December 11th with Franklin Sanders, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.